by the numbers, quantitatively like 50% larger than any DAS in history. Qualitatively, it was the first time DAS as an event has ever broken into like the crypto native sphere, which is a really cool feeling.
Hey everyone, if you have been listening to Empire, you know that Santi and I are fed up with unaffordable fees and frustrating transaction speeds that make the on-chain experience basically unusable. So the Arbitrum team reached out and they showed us the platform. They showed us what you can do on Arbitrum. Whatever you're doing, you can experience frictionless transactions at lightning speed on Arbitrum. So head over to portal.arbitrum.io and check it out.
What's up, everyone? Before we jump into today's episode, I'm excited to share Empire's first ever security partner. Harpy is the best tool to prevent your wallet from theft in real time. Harpy is not just a security solution, they are a peace of mind solution. But don't just take our word for it. Harpy is the only wallet security solution that protected 100% of its users from attacks like the Ledger one in Q4, which was an off-chain signature attack. To learn more about Harpy, click the link in the show notes or visit harpy.io/empire. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across more than 50 different blockchains. If you are building anything in crypto, you likely need verifiable randomness and you need oracles. Well, for Empire listeners, Supra is now offering a limited deal. It is 12 months of Supra free for any Empire listener. You can go to supra.com, that's supra.com/blockworks. Limited time only. Go check it out. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring Empire. What's up, everybody? We are doing the roundup today, but it's really just a DAS recap because Santi and my schedule got all screwed up because of DAS, which we want to recap here for you guys. If you missed it, we want to recap it. If you made it, it was awesome meeting a lot of you. It was really one of the highlights of the year, I think, for me was meeting a lot of you guys at the Empire meetup, which we can talk about. But Santi, my friend, how we doing?
Doing all right. A bit tanned, I guess.
Dude, you look like blushing. Shit.
I am blushing. It's overwhelmed by, you know, we've been doing this for, what is it, almost 2 years? Over 2 years.
Yeah, March. Actually, we totally missed our anniversary. March of 2021. Oh, no, three years. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been doing 3 years. It took us a while to, like, get in the flow and swing. But I think this is the first time we really got connected to the people that have listened. And honestly, it's the most rewarding thing. For me, at least. And I think you also came to me first day right before my panel and we were like, it's amazing to see like just people really enjoying it. And it's for me, it's more wholesome, more fulfilling than anything else in what I do professionally.
I knew that people enjoyed the podcast. I didn't realize it was cool, man. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to share anyone's personal stories here, but like there was this one episode we did with Joe McCann and I didn't realize how impactful that episode, I think, got several people who came up to me like that changed the course of their financial life, as they told me, because they bought Bonk and it went up and, you know, into meme coin season. And like, I don't know, but it was really cool meeting everyone. Maybe let's zoom out. Like what were your thoughts on, because we can talk about the meetup in a little bit, but like, so you've been to permissionless. What were your thoughts on DAS as an event? I don't think you've attended DAS before.
No. Really, really good crowd. I mean, obviously it skews institutional, investors, regulators, companies. So, you know, of course I don't have the benefit of having attended other DAS, but other conferences. In this moment, I made an effort to go because we are like the ETF just got approved. And it's in the zeitgeist, right? Particularly for institutions. And so it was useful to attend the event and like get a feeling for that. And of course, we're in a bull market, so conferences are always more chaotic. But I think it was the panels, the caliber of the speakers was very compact. And like in a couple of days, you could sort of, for me, I wanted to go out there to also, as an investor, to understand the state of the market, the sentiment out there, and to validate or invalidate certain ideas that I've had. And so I can get into a little bit more of what I mean by that, but I think it was a very well-organized event. Someone did comment like, oh, there's too many suits. I'm like, well, yeah, that's like to ask, you know, right?
Point of the event, my friend. That's the point of the event.
So, but it was also, London in and of itself is a good epicenter for just, it is a very thriving crypto hub. It has been for a while. So you did have a lot of the local companies or European-based companies, even kind of Eastern Coast, like come to the event, which is also pretty cool. So yeah, I don't know what you felt about it, but overall, yeah. Very
Do you know we originally had this DAS in DC, which was just a horrendous call? And then, you know, we were talking to all these sponsors, actually, and people were, you know, because basically early 2023 regulation was at the heart of the industry. And so we were like, oh, let's put it in DC. Like, that'd be cool. Go to the belly of the beast. All these sponsors, like, you know, talk to all the crypto brands. They're like, yeah, that's great. You're doing it in DC. I won't be there. I'm not going there. So then we finally, we called like three or four people. We called, I think it was Constantine from Block Daemon, Jeremy Allaire from Circle, Stani from Aave. And we said, if we do it in London, will you guys, like, what do you think? They're like, yes, that is where you need to go. So can you hear the sirens, by the way?
No, but you, right. If you're recording in New York, there's always sirens or having a call.
It's like blasting outside. By the way, I'm sorry, folks. I'm sick as a dog right now. So So I got back Thursday from London. I'll tell you about DAS in a second, my thoughts on it. I got back Thursday, landed at like 3 p.m. And I had to race back home because I was babysitting my niece. And she's 15 months old. And my wife's sister and her husband basically dropped this kid off with us. And they left the kid for 3 days, wow. Which is the first time in my life I have ever taken care of a baby. And my wife and I are both sick.
Are you more inclined now to have a baby after that?
This episode is dedicated to every parent in crypto out there. Like, also any single parents. Like, I truly don't understand how you do it. By Sunday, I was like, take this. So, kid. It was remarkable how hard it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was living in New York, I got a French bulldog.
And I bought a baby. I just, yeah, and I, well, returned.
No, you adopt a baby, Jason, not buy a baby. But I bought a dog, and yeah, it's a full time job. So
what happened to the French bulldog?
French bulldog is vacationing permanently with my parents. Nice. I was traveling so much. He's living a better life.
He is living a good life. So, anyways, my thoughts on DAS. So for some context, so Blockworks launched. So Mike and I founded the business December 2017. We quit our jobs May of 2018. The first DAS was May of 2019. And it was the biggest thing we'd ever done. We bet the whole company. We bet every dollar in the bank account on the first DAS. If it worked, we would have a business. If it didn't work, there would be no Blockworks today. Mm. We bet the entire company. And there's actually a funny story of that, which I'll share, which is that we hired this woman, Julie Muroff, who's currently still runs all of our events and is just an absolute stud. And before the first DAS, we were hosting these little happy hours. They were 6 to 10 p.m. And we would spend like $5,000, pull in 15 to 20, and we'd net like 10 to 15 or 15, yeah, around 10 to 15K. And Mike and I were stoked, right? We're only employees of the business. Like, you know, it's like good money to be making. And so we hired Julie to help us with event operations. And she proposed a budget to Mike and I. And the budget she proposed, I think, was 350K. And at the time, we had 300K in our bank account. But Julie was like the first real employee that we hired. Right. And we were so nervous that she would quit if we
didn't give her the budget.
Say yes, or if we were like, oh, what? Like, this budget's crazy. So we just approved the budget on the spot. And then we basically, Mike looked at me, went out for beers after. He's like, you better fucking sell this thing. He's like, I'll figure out everything else. Then ops with Julie, ticketing, go sell some sponsorships. So anyway, so...
I want to ask you a question around, to give listeners perspective on how the industry's evolved. I think it's useful to like look at it through a lens of like someone like you that has organized these conferences. Like, what is like the first conference, the first DAS, and that experience of going out, talking to sponsors, talking to large institutions, the feedback, the reception that you got then, and how has it changed over the years, particularly and especially now? I'm kind of curious because you have to organize these well in advance. We were not in the state of the market we are today when you started planning DAS for this year. So yeah, maybe just give us a good insight view into how this all works.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to pull up like, you know, the keynote, the two keynotes at DAS 2019. It was, I've got our 2019 page pulled up. It was the CTO of the DTCC and DJ Chan from a company in China called Fusion. Like it was like, I mean, yeah it was the sponsors were Dealbox, Founders Bank, Harbor, Hedera, Token IQ, TokenSoft, Seed CX, Total, and a law firm. Like we, you know,
more than half the companies don't no longer exist, by the way.
Most of the companies no longer exist. Some of them rebranded, some of them got acquired, most of them went under. But you know, I remember sitting down with Copper, right? Copper, huge multi, you know, unicorn company. They've raised, I think, $500 million to date, and we were trying to sell them on a sponsorship. And their CEO basically said, look, we have six employees. We just raised like our first $1 million. Like we can give you maybe 7K. We're like 7K, done. And now, you know, now they've raised 500 million. But yeah, so that DAS, that first DAS was a one-day event. It had 500 people. This was our eighth digital asset summit. So we've hosted seven DASes in the past in both New York and London. The biggest DAS, so usually they have about 500 to 800 people, very B2B, very institutional. The biggest DAS in history before this was New York in 2022. That was like standing room only, like really crazy. It was a two-day event. This DAS, for context, again, biggest one ever, 1,200 people. This was, I think, 1,700 or 1,800. I haven't got the final report from the team. I think between 1,700 and 1,800 registrants, three-day event. And we, yeah, so the hotel made us stop selling these tickets. We capped out registration. So it was easily, I mean, by the numbers, quantitatively, like 50% larger than any DAS in history. Qualitatively, it was the first time DAS as an event has ever broken into like the crypto native sphere, which is a really cool feeling. So for us, like I've always felt like there's crypto Twitter, there's permissionless, there's ECC, there's DevCon, there's, you know, there's all these events happening over here. And then like Blockworks has this like suit and tie event happening over here. And it's been both fun and cool, but also kind of annoying. I'm like, hey guys, like, you know, pay attention to us over here. And this was the first time in history that I think DAS broke through the kind of Rubicon into the crypto native sphere. It was the first time we've ever been able to get some of the huge names like BlackRock and Goldman and Marshall Wace and some of the largest allocators in the world and largest financial institutions. But also we got most of the tier one DeFi protocols there as well, which was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was useful for me because I got a chance to meet with a lot of the portfolio companies that I haven't caught up in a while. I was able to have dinner with folks like Stani and others. So it's actually quite nice. I would agree with you. It's a good treat to mix both.
It was cool. I mean, we've also started like a lot of the first panels of the opening panel at a lot of these events in the past for DAS was, are the institutions coming or when are the institutions coming? And we made a point. I think Mike might've said this in his opening talk. There's no longer for 5 years since May of 2019, there's a question mark at the end of that panel. When are the institutions coming? How will the institutions come in? For the first time ever, we felt pretty confident not adding a question mark at the end of that panel. It said, the institutions are here. And that was just like a very symbolic moment, I think, for us. So it was just cool seeing, yeah, that was exciting. It was cool seeing the different, I mean, the quality of new products in the industry is insane. I'm sure we'll see it, you know, 10x that at permissionless in October, but just the number of new products is insanely high. It was cool seeing the themes. I think there were a few like really clear themes. There's always a few clear themes at every event that are talked about. Like I think at ETH Denver is like modularity, AI, Bitcoin L2s, and restaking. And at this, I mean, I'd be curious to ask you, like, were there any like things that you like takeaways or topics or things that you think everyone was discussing?
I think a lot of people are asking like, where are we in the cycle? The panel that I was at, that was the bulk of the conversation centered around that. Because people really want to understand kind of that timing, which is a very interesting but also not interesting question.
By the way, there are two panels that are there's a contest going on right now. So we send out this we always send out a post-event survey. Day the event ends, send the survey out. And there's a contest happening, I think, between two panels for panel of the event. And it's down to you and who else was on your panel? Pranav from Vinak, David, Jordy Cal- Alexander.
Jordy.
Yeah, there's a debate happening, or there's a contest happening. It's that panel people are voting on as panel of the event versus the live 1000X podcast with Avi and Jonah and Mike. So yeah. it's a heated battle.
I pinged you after. I said, hey, we missed the shot to do a live podcast. And
That was a botch.
I would have liked it because who doesn't like to talk for more? No, I'm kidding. Because I think it would be nice to have there are a lot of fund managers there. A lot of them, when you think about observations, most of them are still predominantly skewed to allocating to Ethereum. I continue to believe the most funds in the space don't have or are under allocated to Solana and other ecosystems, but specifically Solana. And it would have been nice to have for instance, a debate with, I don't know, Vance from Framework or someone else. And I'll take the alternative and have kind of like those, you see these type of debates in like SOAM conferences and other type of conferences, like all hedge fund managers show up and like you have these debates. Or venture capital show up. But I feel like that's an opportunity. I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but I left the event with ideas of how to make this podcast better. Also really grateful for listeners. We have a really engaged audience, but I think we can take it further. For the North Star for this podcast has always been, how can we make this industry better? Because we felt at the time and still do, that we can raise the bar for educational content. Of course, we both invest. We have biases. We try to be upfront about them, but we'd like to bring in people that are doing interesting things, primarily founders and other investors, to challenge our views, to have this healthy debate and discussion, right? And so I think there's an opportunity to carve out that. Like, you know, I would ask people, hey, would you like to see our best episodes historically have been where we bring like Avicii and Hasib, for instance. Now, those guys historically tend to agree on a lot of things, but make a point of bringing, you know, maybe more of a debate format where we can have one discussion topic, just one, right? And I think there are two or three that are, as you say, like hot narratives. Hey, is restaking going to introduce more risk? Existential one, perhaps, to Ethereum. Hey, let's have a debate about that. Let's have the Eigen guys. Let's have people that take the opposite. You know, the scaling or the Solana versus Ethereum. Okay. Let's have a debate about that. I guess the last point I'll mention is a part of what the reason why I like going to conferences is to understand the state of kind of just generally the market and market participants. I had this thesis and I came away confirming validating some of that thesis that like most people don't put in the work, including founders. And there's a lot of superficiality in the industry. I'm not the most technical person. I understand that. But I think part of doing this podcast allows us to constantly, like, we can't go on a limb and say dumb shit because we're going to be chewed up by everyone. And so part of being public about it is you sort of maintain a level of intellectual honesty and you get called on bullshit really quickly. But I was a bit shocked, but also not shocked because I've had it like lurking as an idea is that most people, like, for instance, someone was very critical of Solana. I'm like, okay, when's the last time you like tried? When's the last time? All right, hold on. I'm gonna change views.
Dude, what is this? What is this man like, doing in the background?
He's like on a treadmill. He's like, I'm at this library at this lodge.
Hold on. You can sit there. Yeah, Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah. So it's this idea of like how much work do people put in? And look, clearly not everyone puts in the work. And there's a lot of luck. There's skill and there's luck, right? And when you think about like, why are you successful? Well, someone might have listened to the podcast with Joe Bonk, chose to, you know, and that was, you know, you could argue that that's a bit of luck. That's, you know, timing, whatever. But, you know, for instance, someone comes out and says, hey, I think Solana is sort of like a whatever, a VC coin. There's a lot of meme coin activity there. It's going to subside. And as soon as it subsides, Solana's going to go down. I'm like, all right, well, how many apps have you tried in Solana? Crickets. I'm like, okay, great. So another one comes out and says, oh, Bear Chain is super risky. I'm like, why? I'm interested. Of course, I don't tell them. I heard it from two people, two prominent front managers. I'm like, why? Enlighten me without telling them that I was a seed investor. Or asking, did you tune into the podcast that we recorded with Smokey? No. I'm like, okay. So what don't you like about it? Well, proof of liquidity is so-and-so. I'm like, can you articulate to me what proof of liquidity is? Couldn't. And then they're like, his whole argument was like, it's in a non-team. I'm like, oh, okay, you might, you probably also hate Bitcoin, right? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, Satoshi is not. He's like, well, it's different. I'm like, okay, well, but is it? Like, I don't know. So like, it's just fun to deconstruct all these like logical fallacies of like people just like go on the limb and say dumb shit. And I think there's a lot of that in the space. So I came out really invigorated to be more of that. And I think last year, you and I felt that there was an opportunity to do that.
I was next to you in one of those conversations. You came out swinging.
I'll chew someone out. If you haven't done the work, I'm now going to make a point of
Yeah, I was. I have no problem like seeing that part. Yeah, that was interesting.
Usually I don't, because like when you interview a founder, I think there's.
I couldn't tell how frustrated you were. Like I actually sensed like a bit of frustration from you, and I was like, is this because you have big bags in this thing, or because you're frustrated they haven't done the work, but they're kind of talking like they've done the work? Like where is this coming from, Santu?
I'm actually like really.
I know the exact conversation you're talking about.
I'm actually really, as an investor, I get really excited about that, because that's why you make money. When people don't do the work and they dismiss something, it's sort of like that. Tell me something you believe in today that's going to be obvious. You know, of course, I have my views on Barrow, but do I know everything about Barrow? No. But it is interesting to observe how people just come to conclusions really quickly. And I think that doesn't happen in crypto, just in crypto. But I do think that there were in the state where like people, it's hard to put it in perspective. Like I just generally think that most people don't do the work and come to conclusions really quickly. Whereas I don't allow yourself to process more information. Like this guy just kind of went on and came swinging. I'm like, Bear is super risky. I'm like, okay, well, let's deconstruct that. And like within two questions, his whole argument fell apart. I'm like, well, as opposed to just doing that, maybe just ask the question, right? And like if you can delay as a general framework, let me know if you disagree with this. If you can delay coming to a conclusion about a person or an idea or a project, it's probably useful, because why would you? Like just no one's like forcing – I'm almost putting a gun to your hand saying, Bear Chain, bullish or bearish? It's like, no, dude, like you can take your time to form an opinion. And most people just don't take that, like don't allow themselves to process more information. So It was an interesting conversation for sure. Historically, I would have just like let it slip, but I just was like, all right, I'm going to try a different tactic here.
I think there's a... All right, here's one thing I noticed. I caught up with a lot of founder friends in London who I just hadn't seen in a long time. A lot of people who started companies around the same time as Blockworks, like 2017, 2018. I think there's a real sense of, first off, there's a real sense of exhaustion with most founders, I would say, in the industry. With most people in general. Like we're hitting that part of the bull market where it's just like, you wake up, you've got 70 telegrams, you've got 400 Slack messages, you went to bed with inbox zero, now you've got like, you know, 350 email. Like it was just like and then meanwhile, like you open Twitter, you're trying to do the hard work at the company, you open Twitter and like everyone's making millions of dollars on Boom or whatever it is, right? So like I think there's a sense of exhaustion with a lot of folks that first off, just exhaustion. Second thing I think that there is a frustration with where we've entered the part of the cycle where there's new people in crypto coming in. And a lot of that is great because we want to onboard new people, but then there's some people who I think start companies in crypto for all the wrong reasons. Is I've actually shifted the questions I ask when angel investing now. I used to ask, what's the valuation? Who do you think of as the competitors? What's the unique strategy? The first question I now ask is, what are you doing? Why are you in crypto? What are you doing? Why didn't you come in 2017? Why didn't you come in 2021?
What's your end game?
Like, why now? And it's been, I think, behind the scenes, what's happening with a lot of founders is there's actually a lot of frustration by people who see people in it for the wrong reasons, who then take off on Twitter. By the way, not Barrachain. I will say I was wrong on Barrachain. And I ended up spending a lot of time with both you and the framework guys, Michael and Vance, and you guys all convinced me otherwise on Barrachain stuff. But like, there are some companies I think that are taking off on Twitter and like catching a narrative that like behind the scenes, if you talk to the founder, like they're really in it for the wrong reason. So I do think there's some of that.
It is. I mean, the frustrations I've heard over the years are, here I am trying to like reinvent the financial system, and in comes a meme coin that is worth like more than all of DeFi. And it's like, I was critical of meme coins in the past for that reason. I felt that they were a distraction. I felt that they were making a mockery of the space. And now, you know, a lot in my panel, I've actually shifted my opinion on it quite a bit, a lot. And I think you need to pay attention to things that are catching on. And I've sort of, who cares what I think? It's like, why am I imposing? I sort of at one point, I said, why am I imposing my worldview of what has value? Like, if people clearly find entertainment value, well, who am I to say that that's good or bad? I think ultimately, like, I don't know, we have a lot of, I would encourage people to have less opinions about stuff. I think constantly you get put in a spot, whether you're in a dinner conversation or you're with friends or whatever. And it's always like, okay, what do you think about this or that or the elections? Or it's like it's okay to say, I don't know. And I've started to do that more and more. And so like, you know, I think it just comes from a place where you're not supposed to know most things. And it's actually just better to ask more questions. The more important thing that I think I agree with you is, so what do you do about it? There's all, you can't really change that, right? It happens in every cycle, not just in crypto. In crypto, I think you see it more visibly, right? Because crypto Twitter, and you see, you know, certain, the wrong projects get attention, or you know, there was a time where BNB had more transactions, like PancakeSwap all of a sudden had more transactions than Uniswap. And is that good or bad? Like, I don't know. I'm neutral. Like,
it just is.
All I care about is more onboarding. What I think is different now is that I think we have really useful projects and
protocols.
Like, so anyways, one other thing that I kept getting asked is, how can we be relevant this cycle? I think there is a sense of lack of relevance from certain founders that have been it for a while. It's sort of trying to navigate the space.
Especially some of the older DeFi founders, I would say.
And you know what my response to that was, what is your strategy to go on, you know, Solana? What is your strategy to go on a move-based language? Like, DeFi is likely going to live and be very successful in a move-based chain, whether it's Aptos or Sui or Say or something like Movement. Just because it's, I believe it's a safer thing. So, yeah, I think it's a very interesting time in the market. Forget about the cycle part. It's more of, and I've, a lot of my Solana thesis is distilled in this idea that finally we're going to start seeing a lot of traction in certain applications. And for the first time, it's going to become more apparent of which chains can actually support credible adoption versus not. And that flywheel is just going to make it more and more apparent.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people are prepared or positioned for that eventuality. I think it happens sooner. And, you know, because So in the panel, and I'll stop talking. I think I've talked enough. Someone in the YouTube comments can say I remember. Anyways,
If there's not a YouTube comment that says like Santi, you're rambling, then like yeah, then you haven't talked enough.
There's always like that. There's always that guy. Shout out to that guy. I love you. Please keep me honest. So in the panel, someone's like, you know, there's no products in crypto. Some institutions, right, are like, so what is crypto used for? I'm like, you know, I honestly, like historically, I've struggled with that, and I've tried to make up ideas of like how it's going to be used. I'm like, listen, guys, we've already figured it out. It's like financialization is a massive market. Stable coins, even if we didn't innovate, the amount of growth that this industry can have on that use case alone, I don't know if you would agree with this, is like orders of magnitude.
I completely agree with that. All right, I mentioned them in the pre-roll. Now I'm going to bring them up again. It's Arbitrum. Santi and I are really fed up with these high fees, and we're really excited to have teamed up with Arbitrum for the next couple of months on Empire. As the leading Ethereum scaling solution, Arbitrum now powers hundreds of decentralized apps across DeFi, perps, NFTs, gaming, and a whole lot more. The team has showed us everything in the ecosystem, both now and what's to come, and we're really, really excited about it. Arbitrum allows both daily users and developers to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. The way the team got me excited was through portal.arbitrum.io. So my call to action to you is to get started by visiting portal.arbitrum.io. Go experience on-chain like it was meant to be. For a lot of Empire listeners, your crypto is not just another number on a screen. It's part of your future. I know Santi and myself feel that way. Our security sponsor of this episode, Harpy, takes this responsibility seriously and is the only wallet security tool that shields users from both on-chain threats and sneaky off-chain signature attacks. If you've ever been in that situation where you're moving quickly, you approve something on-chain, you realize that the address might be a dubious address, or you're really hoping that you could take that back, Harpy has you covered. Harpy can redirect your assets to your self-custodied vault, ensuring they remain completely under your control, safe and sound. With Harpy's always-on monitoring, you're not just detecting threats, you're actively blocking and recovering compromised assets from malicious transactions before they can even confirm on-chain. Harpy is the only wallet security solution that protected 100% of its users from attacks like the Ledger one in Q4, which was an off-chain signature attack. So if you're serious about protecting your crypto investments, it's time to make the switch. Secure your wallet for free at harpy.io/empire. That's Harpy, harpy.io/empire. If you want it to be even easier, just click the link in the show notes. This episode is brought to you by Supra, an Oracle provider across over 50 different blockchains. Whether it's critical price levels or liquidation triggers, beat your competition to the punch with Supra. It's as good as having the first mover advantage on every price update. Supra offers fast oracles and DVRF free for 12 months at supra.com/blockworks for a limited time only. So you're going to want to bank on this 12-month free offer as soon as possible. And if you're just listening and you know any builders, you can earn $1,500. That's $1,500 that you can go throw into Bonk or Whiff or whatever meme coin you like by letting them know about this deal. They can get fast oracles today free for 12 months, and you get $1,500 for the referral. You can visit supra.com/blockworks to learn more. Go check them out. Tell them Santi sent you. Tell them Jason sent you. We got you back. Thanks, Supra, for sponsoring. I shared something the other day. There's this really well-written multi-coin post. Did you read this thing on the financialization of you know, quote, everything? Anyways, here's this tweet that I sent out, which a bunch of people sent me this one thing called the attention theory of value that someone named Cheyenne at Multicoin ended up writing. But I tweeted a couple weeks ago. I said, it's now clear that anything that commands attention online will get financialized. Social accounts, micro bets, platform points, creator content, memes, music, all of it. I have no idea if this will be, I think the next question is, will this be good or bad for society? People like pontificate. No clue, no idea. And I don't think it's my role to discern that. No idea if it's good or bad for society, but I have strong conviction that it happens. And I have strong conviction that it happens on chain. And so, by the way, Byron, do you read our daily newsletter?
I do.
Byron had this great piece on meme coins. I just want to read it. It's like, it really ties into what you were just talking about with meme coins. So I'm going to read like 30 seconds. It says, some meme coin believers are trying to rebrand them as culture or community coins. Others rationalize that buying meme coins is akin to investing in a brand, or more generally, the attention economy. I even saw one commentary asserting that meme coins are as legitimate as Social Security because they're both Ponzi's. They're all overthinking it. Everything you need to know about meme coins is right in the name. Meme coins are coins that let you trade memes. And in this, they are the purest possible distillation of Keynes's beauty contest. The only reason to buy a meme coin is because you think others will buy it after you. And that's an entertaining thing to do and generally harmless as long as everyone knows that what game they're playing, which I think they do, more so at least than with the rest of crypto. When there's a lot of room for confusion, it's harder to explain why someone would want to buy a pure governance token than why someone would buy a meme coin. And I would even go so far as to argue, this is his closer, that meme coins are now one of the most honest things in all of crypto, and also more honest than large parts of TradFi, and at least as honest as a Vegas casino.
Amen.
I just thought it was like really well put. I don't know. Don't overthink it. Meme coins are coins that let you trade memes. They're Keynes's beauty contest, right? I think that beauty contest references judges voting on who they think that the other judges are going to think is the, you know, has the most beautiful face, not who they actually think is the most beautiful face. And that's
beautifully said. People forget, but the key novelty of crypto is digital scarcity and property. And you've now been able to encapsulate a meme in a form of a token. And, you know, that's a pure expression. A lot of these meme coins have all of the circulating supply. There's no single holder that owns, you know, more than 5-7, greater than 10%, you know, it's out there, it's on the wild. And, you know, it's crypto is sort of a pure capitalist expression. If you're open market, that's open 24/7, 365. It's actually really interesting. It is actually also applicable to some like prediction markets, like what you're seeing with Biden and Trump. Fascinating.
Yeah, really fascinating.
I would go as far, you know, it's going to be quite interesting in the elections in terms of how do these things actually trade. Of course, you have like some like a polymarket market on the elections, which is commanding a lot of liquidity, like 92 million or so yesterday that I checked. But like contrast that to just a meme coin that represents Trump or Biden, I guess Biden, and how that trades. And as a, I think if you're a political pundit or statistician, I think it's more accurate than a survey.
Yeah.
I was just looking at number of holders and it's people, voter turnout is low, has been, always has been. But when you introduce, when people have a stake in the game, they have a vested interest. And so that's, I think, a very pure expression of information.
Yeah. I botched it. I forgot to tell people at the top of this, speak of newsletter and Byron, Empire's launched a newsletter. Very excited. Yeah, we are doing that. We are launching a newsletter. So you will be listening to this episode on Tuesday, March 26th is when it comes out. And the week after, next Tuesday, April 2nd, we are launching a newsletter. So if you guys want to read the inaugural newsletter that we send out, you can subscribe. You can link in show notes or, you know, whatever our producer wants you to do. If you're, Joseph, put a link somewhere in the show notes. Basically, the reason we're launching this is twofold. One, I still don't feel like there's a newsletter that we have this daily newsletter. Byron puts it out every day at 7. It's his thoughts on like the market. He's a trader for many years, like very great thoughts, kind of pontificating on what's going on. There's no morning newsletter that I read that I actually believe adds value. A lot of them are like, you know, a lot of the other media companies put these things out in the morning that are like, here's the news of the day. Doesn't give me anything though. Doesn't give me any insights. It doesn't go a layer deeper on any of the news stories. So Empire newsletter is going to be every single morning, Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, giving you the news of the day with and going one layer deeper. And so that's going to be, we've got a full team working on this thing. So every single day, 7 a.m. And Santi and I are going to use it if Santi wants. I'm going to be writing. I think there's a lot of... put you on the spot there. Sometimes I have things that I aren't right for a tweet and they're not right for a podcast. And I end up maybe sometimes just doing these like long threads on them, but then I kind of have to put it into Twitter format. And I actually write a good amount, but just kind of on my own. I'm going to be putting those thoughts into the newsletter. I might write once a week. I might write once every other week. Santi might, I don't know when Santi's going to do it, but either way, it's Monday through Friday, 5 days a week with some guest posts from Santi and me. So yeah, go subscribe. Go click that link.
Jason, I like Jason so much because he makes me do things, and I've been punting this going back to reactivating my Substack, and this is just going to be the way to do it. So
also, I have to give a big shout out to Composable Finance. They shout out Henry over there. They're taking a leap of faith on the Empire brand and on us too. They're actually the first sponsors of the Empire newsletter. So big shout out to Composable and what they're working on. It's composable.finance. Yeah, you guys should go check them out.
I had a chance to meet him in London, so that was great.
Yeah, I also had a great meeting with Henry. So I would say, okay, so big themes of DAS. So meme coins, obviously. I would say there's like stable coins. If you want to talk about that crypto, like crypto's killer use case, there was a lot of talk about stable coins. Tokenization RWAs for an institutional event weren't as talked about. I think everyone's kind of bored and sick of it. ETFs, a lot of talk about ETFs. They've kind of like, I think people kind of understand what the ETFs are good for at this point. They give institutions exposure to crypto. They do it on terms that institutions can understand. They will drive huge growth in asset prices. They will not be a major catalyst for on-chain participation. There's kind of this consensus that I think they're going to drive.
The last part I don't necessarily agree on, but
interesting. Like I would think,
yeah, I mean, it's a sort of a law of large numbers. Like, if you believe stablecoins reach a couple trillion, then it's always that.
Not like, stablecoins, ETFs.
Oh, the ETFs, sorry. I thought you
ETFs.
Said
no, stablecoins are all. No, stablecoins are the.
But okay, so even that, right? I mean, it's sort of. Can you point to most people that, like, it's difficult because the ETFs are not around, but like they bought one thing and then kind of stopped there?
No, I think that's a good point. Like Bitcoin is kind of the gateway drug. So let me rephrase it. I don't think there'll be a huge driver in growing asset prices this cycle. I don't think there'll be a huge driver in growing on-chain participation this cycle.
That I agree with.
I think a lot of talk about like ETH ETF, yeah, a lot of talk about that. Staking and restaking. It was really interesting hearing from the financial, like from the big players about how they think about staking and restaking. I always think of these like ideas as like these crypto native ideas. You have some of the world's largest asset managers saying, quote, staking and restaking will reshape financial products forever. And like that, you know, I just thought it was like, yeah, there's kind of this consensus that institutions are going to do some sort of staking. I think
Was it BlackRock that updated or Fidelity? I forget which one updated their ETF application recently to include staking.
I forget which one. But, you know, someone had this quote, staking. They said staking, we understand internally that staking is a core process for securing blockchains. We don't just think of it as a money-making activity. We think of it as a core process for securing blockchains. And we just like, so we are doing the work and we are getting some return for doing work. And like that's staking at its simplest, yeah, like description. And I just thought it was cool to hear these folks understand it like this.
Yeah, that's, I will say, I mean, as a general comment, the sophistication of institutions understanding this asset class has gone up dramatically. A lot of them have done the work. I think there is a subset that has been lurking in the closet because they haven't felt comfortable saying that they believe in this or like it. And all of a sudden with an ETF, the career risk, the reputation risk goes down dramatically. And that's very refreshing because I even heard it from one listener that works at a pretty prominent bank, and he said, listen, everyone loves crypto. Everyone. And I come to these events, they're all talking about it. They all love it. They like the meme coins. They're constantly paying attention, but there is still this tension, right? And, you know, like what you can, you know, the career risk of, there's still some of that. I think it continues to go away as we have more ETFs and this becomes just in the narrative. I mean, it's been in the narrative for a long time, but it's the career risk, the reputation risk, right? That, oh, you're in crypto? Well, oh, God, or like FTX, God, you know, geez, all you guys are just a bunch of Wild West cowboys running around, you know, slinging it. And I was like, no. Part of, I think, what this industry is challenged with is the lack of media companies at scale. Like, and I think there is a very subset of...
Yeah,
like,
why isn't anyone building that?
Right, you know? Well, what I'm trying to... like, my frustration was like, when I would have pitched crypto to, you know, my former colleagues at Sage or JP Morgan, they're like, they would very quickly point me to their primary source of knowledge or understanding what was happening in the space, to like a podcast that was like not something that I would listen to or encourage people to listen to. There was just shilling a bunch of bags. And, or, I mean, I think Bloomberg has gotten quite better over the years, but in the early days, it was just like the coverage that it got was like only reporting on negative stuff, or the Financial Times, right? That, you know, it was largely just sensationalism, and crypto has a lot of that. So I get it. I mean, it drives attention. But, you know, I think we've become better, but I think there's still a huge opportunity to continue to grow and present crypto in a more objective way, and not just the more sensational like headlines, right? That drive like attention.
Yeah. I think there'll be, I'm optimistic there'll be better media. So Bloomberg, I think, laid off most of their,
they're still
crypto,
doing
their- not crypto reporters. They laid off a lot of their crypto product team, at the absolute bottom, or I think it was September, October, 2023. They laid off a lot of their like crypto terminal team, like for the terminal. And I was just like, oh guys, just pure capitulation.
That's a costly mistake.
So Mike and I used to, this is a funny story about Bloomberg. Mike and I used to go into Bloomberg once every like 6 months and give a talk to their team. And we debated if we should do this, and we were like, ah, they're kind of a competitor, but no, never mind. The, you know, terminal's not a competitor. We can work with them. So anyways, we'd go and give a talk about Bitcoin and crypto and what we're seeing and stuff. And we would ask them, what are you guys doing? And I remember this talk by Bloomberg's head of product. He goes, yeah, for the last 2 years, Bitcoin, this was 2020 and 2021, Bloomberg has been the most searched keyword on the terminal for the last 2 years. This was 2019.
Yeah, Bloomberg was the most searched term. It's Bitcoin that was the most searched term on the terminal.
What did I say? Bitcoin is the most searched. Bitcoin is the most searched term on the terminal.
For sure.
So we're considering doing something with Bitcoin now. Huh. I was like, guys. Like, I see something. The next day we are doing it. Like,
yeah. I guess now it's like NVIDIA and AI, but like I would think that crypto is still top five.
Probably. I mean, our site traffic, like things are going bonkers right now. It's crazy. What else are we talking about?
No, I mean, we wanted to record this pod to talk about the conference takeaways from that. I think we've touched on a lot of those. I don't know if there's anything else you'd want to add in terms of, I mean, my panel specifically was, we could go into that. I mean, I think we covered some elements there, but.
I would just say like the Empire meetup was the highlight, and I would just like, yeah, I don't know. I met all these big government people and big asset managers, and you know, which was cool, like felt fun and stuff. But like truly the highlight was like that kind of grungy bar on Wednesday, meeting a lot of folks or having people come up to me at the conference being like, I listen to every episode of Empire on my runs. I would just give like, yeah, to all, it was I see numbers on a screen every day. I see like downloads and streams and YouTube views and random comments saying Santi sucks, which I know, obviously, and Santi's ugly, which I know.
Guys, stop wasting your time. I already know that. Meet some wealth, but comment some wealth.
But it was cool, man. It was really cool meeting a lot of you guys and just seeing what you do, and you know, a lot of TradFi folks who like crypto by night and on weekends, and It was just awesome. So you guys gave me a lot of energy to keep pushing with this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I you know, of course it's great to hear people are enjoying it, but I would ask most people, hey, what can we do better? And a lot said, go deeper on technicals. So we're thinking about that for sure. I think we could add, for instance, the episode with Monad, do more of that format and bring on someone like John, shout out to John, which I think would be a nice addition to bring on those type of episodes. I think people really liked me talking about my mistakes. I certainly can keep talking more about that.
People like me talking, rambling.
No,
people did like that. People, it was actually, I think, our most downloaded episode
ever. I actually told people, look, as soon as we recorded that podcast, I told Jason and Joseph, the producer, I said, guys, I hated this podcast. We got to redo it.
Santi didn't want to run it.
But hey, look, I think it was what people appreciated is I feel more comfortable. Part of the frustration at times with crypto is that, and social media and everything, but is that you just only see one side of a person or of a company, of a founder, for instance, once they're successful. But tell me like how you got there. Tell me more about, it's incredibly difficult. Like, I want to hear specific stories and make it relatable. I hope that we can make this podcast more relatable. Because we all started from zero in crypto. In our understanding of it, we got so much help along the way. We made so many mistakes. So I'm all for making more of that type of content. Seems like people enjoy it. So I'm excited to continue to go deeper and call it stream of consciousness, therapy, whatever it is. There's a lot of thoughts that I have there to continue to share and, you know, open book. You know, I made a lot of mistakes, and that's ultimately, I do it because I will learn, right? Open sourcing my process and coming to conclusions faster. A big part of my Solana thesis was being more vocal about it, helped me understand things much, much faster. Like, I have less of a problem looking like an idiot and being wrong, because ultimately it helps me be right in a meaningful way. If I can correct, if I can adjust, and if we can do that in real time, I think it'd be great for people, especially as this industry changes so much, right? I mean, it's pretty shocking and daunting that it's like, it's incredibly hard to keep up. It's hard not to feel constant sense of like anxiety around that, but it's a good thing, I guess. The industry's growing.
It is. All right. Let's call it. Go subscribe to the newsletter. Link in the show notes.
Piece of content. Got two books because I was traveling.
Oh, I have a book too. I have a book.
London Airport. The nice thing about London is you go to these bookstores, W.S. Smith or W.H. Smith, on the airport, and see, it's always like the buy one, get free. And so anyways, I bought this formula card. I think it's a book about Formula One. Really fun. Kind of like a really good inside story if you like Drive to Survive. The book is pretty cool. The second one.
Why don't you just ask the guys in person?
What was that? And the second one was, yes, actually. But the second one is, I actually, for what I'm ashamed of to say this, but I hadn't read Chris Dixon's Read, Write, Own. Mm. And really, really great. I mean, Chris has always been, in my mind, the person I've learned probably the most. He just has a way of drawing from prior, like the internet and the evolution of the internet, just making analogies. I know they're not perfect. I know there's a subset of people thinking analogies are stupid. I actually think it's the way people learn. And he, if you could pick one voice of this industry, a chief marketing officer, like, it would be, in my mind, Chris.
I agree with that. I agree.
So those two books are really good. And then continue to watch Shogun. Honestly, it keeps getting better. And I'm a big fan of James Clavell. Shogun is good.
Yeah, I think I'm on F5. Also, Three Body Problem, which, like,
is this people, gonna be,
it's gonna be the, it's the one.
Jason, I mean, may I remind you that you went on with him saying that, what was that other show?
No. Well, okay, Three Body. Okay, so first off, let me tell you, one of my best friends said Three Body Problem was his. This is like 5 years ago.
Oh, now you're just saying trilogy it's of wrong. All time. You're gonna blame the friend.
Trilogy of all time. Then Mike read it. I think Mike read the whole trilogy, and he's like, "This is like the best books ever." And then And then Mike said, the shows are good, which Mike is a ridiculous movie and TV nerd.
Yeah.
So now I will watch it.
Okay. Okay. Independent notes, verified.
Verified.
I will take the time to watch it. I do agree. Mike is a huge content consumer, and
it's remarkable. Do you know that? You know, he probably listens to 4 podcasts a day. He listens to podcasts while he works, which is like a remarkable feat.
Goodness. I need to level up.
It's crazy. Mike, shout out you if you're listening. Rest is History came, which we both like this history podcast called Rest is History. They came out with a Titanic series. He had listened to all of those, plus every crypto podcast that Blockworks had put out that week. And we were like 3 days into the week. I was like, my guy, that's like 14 shows in 3 days. Yeah, and it's remarkable. My book is What's Our Problem? It's maybe the best, one of the best blogs on the internet called Wait But Why. The Wait But Why writer put out a book called What's Our Problem? Okay. An analysis of modern times, I would say, of just like, how the hell did we get into, like, it feels like the world's been flipped upside down. Like, how the hell did we get here? You hate the times we live in, or the analysis of the times that we live in?
No, the times, like, it's just the wokeness
here,
of it all.
Here's basically, I think he puts his finger on the problem, which is like, there's this whole group of people who used to identify as really left. There's this whole group of like 25 to 40 year olds who no longer identify with either political party. Either they're Republican, they grew up Republican, but they don't like kind of agree with Trump and they don't like Trump's world, or they grew up liberal and democratic, but they have like so far disagree with like woke culture and like Bernie Bros and AOC and a lot of that kind of stuff. And that's basically both of those buckets are like my friend group. Like either people grew up Republican but they're like, yeah, I really just don't like Trump. Or they grew up Democrat and they're like, honestly, like I just can't get behind voting for Biden, or I just can't get behind like the woke liberals or whatever you want to say. And he puts his finger on like, what the hell happened here? How did we get here? And how should we think about it? And it's a quick read. I'm almost done with it on Audible. I would recommend.
Nice. I'll definitely pick that up. It's a subject that I'm very interested in. So let's call that. Hopefully, thanks for the invite to DAS. I enjoyed it. A lot to learn. And
we got to find something to promote now. Oh, the newsletter, obviously. The newsletter.
Yeah.
Then we can start pumping permission lists, and then DAS in New York in 2025. All right. That's the pod, folks. I got to get some sleep. Right. I got to feel better. So, Santi, enjoy the slopes. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I really appreciate it.
Hey everyone, Jason here. Thank you so much for watching today's episode. Wanted to take a quick second to thank today's title sponsor, Arbitrum. We know you are tired of on-chain experiences that have unaffordable fees and frustrating transaction speeds, and that's why we partnered with Arbitrum. You can experience frictionless trades, lightning speed, and lag-free transactions, all for pennies per transaction. Explore Arbitrum's expanding ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. That's portal.arbitrum.io. See you for the next episode.